This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
December 6th of 2022, Rebecca Giolotta, a psychiatric nurse practitioner at South Shore Health, sits across from Lindsay Clancy and her husband Patrick in an exam room. It's one of the few in-person appointments Clancy had with any provider in the final months before the killings. Giolotta tells them she suspects Lindsay has an underlying bipolar disorder. After taking Zoloft weeks earlier, Lindsay went 48 hours without sleeping. She wasn't tired, despite the insomnia. She had racing thoughts and couldn't stop worrying. Giolotta testified she found the reaction to Zoloft unusual, which is a red flag for bipolar. Patrick Clancy's response in that room: my wife is not bipolar. People gonna react. They are. People are gonna think they know better than the doctors. You know, and it's funny because in the world we live in today, sometimes they do. And sometimes they don't. And sometimes getting information like that thrown at you, the initial reaction, if you don't quite understand what bipolar actually is, which most of us really don't, is just that. Because in our minds, when we hear something like bipolar or psychosis or psychotic, which are two different things, we have an almost cartoon version of it in our minds, or movie-like version of it in our minds, where it's the greatest hits of these disorders, of these ailments, where I couldn't possibly be that. You know, an example is like thinking of the alcoholic the alcoholic sitting under the bridge with the paper bag. Now, the alcoholic is sitting down in the boardroom running the company, possibly into the ground, or it's succeeding wonderfully and nobody has any idea that anything's wrong. Things like this, more times than not, are not the way we picture them in our mind's eye. And that's because we're human. I don't fault Patrick Clancy for having that reaction. I don't fault Lindsay Clancy for sitting there motionless, emotionless, numb to pretty much anything that's going on around her, as she's even said. Lindsay looked at Giolotta. She didn't say anything. Lindsay Clancy has since been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. So the doctor was on to something. On day 11 of her murder trial at Plymouth Superior Court, the nurse practitioner who first raised that possibility told the jury what she saw and what she recommended. One provider identified a diagnosis. The defense is put before the jury 6 weeks before the children died. Giolotta inherited Clancy's care on November 29th of 2022. Julie Paul, who'd started the perinatal behavioral health program at South Shore and treated Clancy for 9 days, transferred out. Paul was the prosecution's 61st witness. Her cross-examination lasted about a minute. Defense attorney Kevin Reddington told Paul she stepped up and treated Clancy with good care and professionalism. He thanked her in open court, then Giolotta took the stand and stayed there most of the day. Giolotta is a board-certified psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner in the same program that Paul built. She's named as a defendant in Clancy's family medical malpractice lawsuit. Her job after the handoff was to manage medications and monitor symptoms. Giolotta testified it was common practice to pair low dosages of multiple medications together to treat depression, anxiety, and sleep at the same time. Clancy messaged Giolotta constantly through the MyChart patient portal from late November through late December of 2022. Quote, "Sorry for all the messages. This is just a scary time for me," she wrote in one message. "I'm willing to try anything," she wrote in another. In a third, she said she felt numb. On December 3rd, Clancy wrote she was having horrible intrusive thoughts. Jolotta testified those thoughts had to do with not wanting to be here anymore. Clancy also wrote she felt completely hopeless. Before Jolotta took over, Clancy had already cycled through four medications between October and mid-November of 22. A South Shore emergency room visit added trazodone to the mix. Reddington walked Jolotta through each prescription to establish the timeline. In one message, Clancy wrote she was scared of starting medications. After 4 days on the regimen Jolotta prescribed, she told Jolotta it wasn't working. Jolotta encouraged her to give it more time. Within days, Clancy wanted dosage changes and different prescriptions. And this is where a lot of people who've never been in that situation, because if you were, you would understand this very differently, like to argue, see, she was shopping for meds. She wanted to get high. She wanted to get effed up. No, she was wanting to be sane. She was wanting to get a decent night's sleep. She was wanting not to live in numbness and brain fog every moment of her life. She wanted to enjoy her children. She wanted to be a connected mother to her little baby whom she had just given birth to, and was confused as hell as to why it was impossible for her to seemingly emotionally connect with him. She wanted to, but there was nothing there to do it with. And if you've never had that feeling of hopelessness, of emptiness, of utter numbness to what should be in front of you or what is in front of you that you know you should be having this emotional, visceral response to, and for some reason your affect to it, your emotional effect to it is, eh. Consider yourself lucky. Consider yourself lucky that you've never been there. And if you've never had a partner or someone you cared about that you're watching going through this, feeling helpless beyond all compare to what you could possibly do for this person, because there's nothing you can do. There's no talking out of this. There's no turn that frown upside down. There's no let's go get some ice cream and make this better. If you're staring at this chasm of emptiness and the person that you love, that is their emotional state, and they don't know how to change it, and there ain't nothing you can do to change it, no matter what you pour yourself into their life, into giving them attention and time and energy. These are things that go far beyond the understanding of husband and wife at home, of someone who loves another person and cares about him. These are dangerous medical conditions that need help, that need to be looked at competently, responsibly, and effectively. Whether there was competency, responsibility, or effectiveness in any of the treatment that Lindsay Clancy got seems to be a bit up for debate. And as much as the prosecution likes to tell us this is not a trial about women's mental health, it is. Nice, shitty bow, by the way. Are we going into third grade this week? Because that's about the level of maturity that the prosecutor is arguing at. If you've never been in those situations, and answer me honestly, if you are being very harsh on Lindsay Clancy and you think she's a monster and she deserves to die and go to prison and blah, 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 ask yourself that. Have you ever been in any of those situations? Not, well, I had a sister, cousin's aunt who kind of would. No. Have you been there? Either the person feeling that or one degree of separation, the caregiver. Because if the answer is no, I'm going to kindly ask you to just shut the fuck up. Because you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. She told Jolotta she feared she was becoming addicted to Ativan. Gelada testified she was not. Gelada had recommended Clancy take Valium daily. Clancy was taking it every other night. In her first visit on November 29th, Clancy scored a 17 on the Edinburgh Postpartum Depression Scale, a screening tool used to measure the severity of postpartum depression. A few days earlier, she scored a 23, severely depressed. Reddington asked Gelada whether she'd reviewed the intake notes describing Clancy as disoriented, forgetful, and not connected to her body. Gelada said she had. She testified the symptoms were serious, but commonly treated at South Shore Perinatal Clinic. Then came the December 6th appointment, the 48-hour insomnia, the sleeplessness without tiredness, the racing thoughts. Gelada testified it didn't fit a straightforward depression presentation. She screened Clancy for bipolar disorder, and some symptoms matched while others didn't. She raised a bipolar possibility despite the incomplete screening results. On cross-examination, Reddington pushed the mania indications further. He asked Gelada whether she knew that Clancy ran a 5K weeks after giving birth to Callan in May of 22 against the wishes of people close to her. Gelada didn't know. She testified she would have noted it as clinically important. Reddington pointed to her own testimony that Clancy denied feeling tired after going without sleep. It's a symptom of mania that we look for, Gelada confirmed. She also confirmed that excessive activity, including fervent cleaning and compulsive exercise, can be a symptom of bipolar mania. Gelada increased Clancy's Seroquel, an antipsychotic medication, also used for bipolar mood stabilization, to 400 milligrams precisely because of the bipolar suspicion. She testified that bipolar patterns can take up to 800 milligrams. It was the one pharmacological move that matched the emerging clinical picture. No other provider pursued the bipolar lead. December 12th of 2022 came around, and Gelada testified she strongly, strongly recommended Clancy enter a partial hospitalization program. December 13th, Clancy had an in-person appointment scheduled but called to make it virtual instead. And December 15th, Lindsay and Patrick called Gelada together. Gelada testified it had been Clancy's worst day. Clancy was having persistent thoughts of ending her life. Gelada told the couple to go to Massachusetts General Hospital for evaluation. They chose Women and Infants Hospital in Providence instead. A partial hospitalization program designed specifically for postpartum patients. Gelada expected Clancy would be there for 2 weeks. She was there for one day. On cross-examination, Reddington asked Gelada whether the program refused to accept Clancy because of concerns she'd been over-medicated. Gelada testified she was concerned about the discharge and messaged Clancy that she could benefit from the groups and added support. Gelada was also hesitant to taper Seroquel because it had been helping Clancy's depression and sleep. She was also to go on vacation. It wouldn't be available to monitor and taper. On December 21st, she provided a written plan for reducing the Seroquel dosage. It was her last contact with Clancy. Then Reddington raised the phone, call Women and Infants records, he said, indicate the hospital tried to reach Gelada and couldn't get a call back. They never called me, Gelada said. I absolutely would have called them back. Reddington asked Gelada how many postpartum psychosis patients she's treated in her career. Gelada never spoke to Dr. Jennifer Tufts, the psychiatrist who'd been treating Clancy since September of 22. She didn't know that Tufts was still seeing Clancy at the same time. She didn't access Tufts' records and didn't know Clancy had stopped driving. On December 30th, Patrick Clancy called the South Shore Clinic to say Lindsay was safe but wanted to go to McLean Hospital in Belmont. Gelada was on vacation. 25 days after that call, Cora Dawson and Callan were dead. This is our medical system. This is a woman, a family, begging for help, begging for direction. And this is what you get. I'll give this one credit. She did seem to be onto something, and she did seem to genuinely care, and she went on vacation. People are allowed to do that. The system just doesn't seem to have a real good way of picking up the slack when someone does live their own life. It's barely prepared to handle its patients' on a good day when everybody is in the office, more or less when somebody's taking a holiday break. I don't know how anyone looks at this case and doesn't go, this medical system failed them catastrophically. Unless you just don't want to admit that our medical system is that screwed up. And if you're in that camp, well, you're not helping anybody because you're basically denying a fact. It's like going outside in a bright, sunny day going, gosh, it's cloudy and these snow, all this snow, it's 100 degrees, all this snow. There's no snow on the ground, but it can. There's potential for snow. It's July and it's 100 degrees, but it's snowed before. We can't have this conversation because you're not operating in the same world that I'm operating in. On direct examination, Jolotta confirmed that Clancy never told her she had a plan to harm herself or hurt her children. On redirect, prosecutor Jennifer Sprague asked one pointed question in her experience treating patients with postpartum psychosis. Did she ever have any concerns based on her contact with Lindsay Clancy that she was suffering from it? I did not, Jolotta said. Sprague ended her questioning. Reddington spoke immediately. It appears as though she was, doesn't it? The prosecution objected. Reddington withdrew the remark and said he had nothing further. The jury heard both sentences. Three of the providers who treated Lindsay Clancy have now testified they didn't see postpartum psychosis. Dr. Aaliyah Goodhart at McLean, Dr. Jennifer Tufts, and Jolotta, the prosecution is building its case on that record. The fun part about psychosis is it doesn't always appear. It's kind of a tricky one. It kind of hides. That's kind of what makes it super scary and icky to talk about and hard for anyone to accept its existence. The defense is building a different record. Jolotta suspected bipolar and was overruled in the room. She expected a two-week hospitalization, and the facility sent Clancy home in a day. System working wonderfully. She never spoke to the psychiatrist treating the same patient at the same time. The program designed specifically for postpartum women looked at Clancy's medication list and decided, can't help you. Lindsay Clancy turned 36 on the day Jolotta testified. The prosecution's case is nearing its close. Reddington has spent 11 days showing the jury that the providers who say they didn't see psychosis were also providers working with incomplete files and incomplete communication. He isn't done with the institutions. Before testimony started, Reddington moved to add new witnesses. Emily Thorndike, a former McLean Hospital social worker, who'd worked in the same unit where Clancy stayed. Thorndike posted on TikTok disputing the prosecution's portrayal of McLean. In one video, she said, the unit typically held 23 patients, split along 4 to 5 doctors. And on weekends and holidays, a single doctor covered all of them. Clancy admitted herself to that unit over New Year's Day in 23. So you got a doctor that's going to testify to the incompetence, to the understaffing, to the inability to be there for patients at the level to which they need by that hospital. And you can get into all the details and the weeds as to why that is. Well, staffing, well, this, well, that. Well, at the end of the day, the end result is the same. When you don't have adequate medical care for the people who are seeking it, everyone is not going to get adequate medical care, no matter how well-intended that one person on staff is. Prosecutors argued Thorndike shouldn't testify because she'd left McLean a year before Clancy's admission and had been watching the trial. The prosecution called her a commentator with opinions, not a witness of the facts. Someone who worked there, lived it, knew it, but has thoughts about it that don't necessarily go along the narrative of the state of Massachusetts, who are basically treating this like a witch trial.
They're not calling her a witch and burning her at the stake. She don't know anything. Get her out.
Judge William Sullivan heard arguments and took the motion under advisement. He told attorneys he couldn't imagine allowing the witness to give, in a sense, her review of McLean. But he signaled the factual questioning of staffing levels over the holiday period might come in through a different path. It's a lot more to come in this case, and we're going to keep following it for you. I'd love for you to give us your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Those links are in the description. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening or watching so you don't miss any of our coverage of this case. There is the QR code on the screen if you're watching us on YouTube right now. Grab your phone quick. Just scan it. That'll take your device to our podcast page on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, wherever you get podcasts. You'll get to choose your player of choice when you go to that link. Hit subscribe. Take us with you so you can listen to our commentary, our reporting, and trial audio. The trial audio of this case, we're bringing it to you every day on the podcast, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Search it, press subscribe. There you go. You're welcome. I look forward to continuing the conversation in the comments section. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.